Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Ella Jean Ehrlich.
I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
I'm Rosie.
This is Martina Navratilova.
This is Mark Forbes.
I'm Andy Murray.
You're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
. 2019 is here. Well, it isn't, because it's still December the 30th, 2018. But this is the Tennis Podcast. I'm David Law. We have got loads of tennis to talk about because the Hotman Cup has started. Brisbane is starting tomorrow. We've got Doha. We've got Pune. We've got coaching changes, rule changes to discuss. Pole vault, obviously. We've got your tennis wish for 2019. We've got your tennis prediction for 2019. And we've got Catherine Whittaker, who is on the line with me here. And we've already had a round. In the last 5 minutes, Catherine. We haven't even started 2019 yet, and we've already exchanged words. How's your Christmas been?
On the line with you. It sounds like a 90s radio station phone-in.
Yes, I called you my guest a few minutes ago, didn't
you
I?
You did. You said, right, so I'm presenting, you're guesting.
That went down well. Crikey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lead balloon stuff immediately.
Yeah, we'll do an outtakes podcast, yes. if we reach the Kickstarter target. How about that?
Yeah,
to be honest, I always quite enjoy listening to that.
If you haven't been following the progress on Twitter, etc., well, I mean, there's many of you that have done us proud. Let me say that immediately. We are so moved and touched by the way people have backed the podcast for a third successive year, our crowdfunding to try to get a budget that we can produce this thing all year long and have a weekly show and daily at the Slams and all the other bits that we do as well. And of course, we're trying to hire Grad Matt, who needs a job now that he isn't a student anymore. So we want to give him a job.
Don't let Grad Matt be another statistic about graduates.
Yes.
Employability of graduates.
We want
don't
good
let
news.
Grad Matt be a statistic. That's our new
That's our catchphrase.
Campaign.
Yeah. Right. Tagline. Don't let Grad Matt go on the dole. 68% funded we are so far, Catherine. So we're getting there. We're getting there. We need to be 100% funded or we don't get a penny. But don't let that worry you. We've still got a couple of weeks to go. 498 people have backed us so far, which, I mean, really is fantastic. We've got a lot of listeners, so hopefully a few more of you will pitch in as well over the next couple of weeks before we bring it to a close just before the Australian Open. One person did ask me on Twitter, and I did answer on Twitter, but not everybody's on social media, so I'll just run you through that quickly here. Asked, why are we crowdfunding? Why do we do this at all? And I think I've just mentioned
it. You are very politely paraphrasing his question there.
Yes, I am. Well,
why do you need a load of money to make a podcast? Just two people talking, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
yeah. There you go.
Quite a lot of work, actually. This thing together. Much as we love it, we are supposed to have normal jobs and pay bills and that sort of thing. So yeah, we've got a fair bit to cover, but I think everybody who contributes to our Kickstarter understands that our goal every year is basically to do our listeners proud and to do those that put their support and faith in us proud and make them feel like it was worthwhile. And having produced, I think, 118 editions of the show last year, I think we did that. And we got all these categories and we have lots of fun with our predictions competition. We have people introducing the show. We've got people guest editing the show. We've got executive producers. We've got Catherine. we've got our mascot sorted for 2019. Who is it?
Rio with a Y. I am delighted. He's got more Instagram followers than us.
We've got a celebrity dog as
yeah. our mascot.
Yes, that is a. How's Rosie feeling about this? I've seen a lot of Rosie action on our Instagram page the last few days.
She's blissfully unaware, and she's distracted by leftover turkey. Put it that way.
Yes, I did see her monitoring the oven quite intensely. But anyway,
she's had a good week. She's had a good week. Yeah, that is for sure.
She has. I've eaten my body weight a number of times. But yeah, anyway, it all comes to a close. Our Kickstarter on January the 13th, I think, just before the Australian Open. Go to Kickstarter.com. Search the Tennis Podcast if you want to back us. There's also links on our website, tennispodcast.net, on Twitter at Tennis Podcast. We're on Instagram and Facebook, The Tennis Podcast. Oh, and I should also say, have a read of Catherine's blog, which tells you all about how this podcast over the years has helped her in various bits of life and career, etc. And it's a fantastic read. And now, Catherine, we can talk about tennis. What do you want to talk about?
Oh, crikey, that's an open-ended question, isn't it? Yeah,
Shall I start?
The 2019 tennis season. Yeah,
let's do that.
In 2018.
Should we talk about...
Other sports must look at us and just think, what are you playing at?
It is
weird, isn't it? Half the players don't even spend Christmas at home, do they?
No.
Half the players spend Christmas out in Australia.
Yeah, I tell you.
Because of the duration. Certainly, if you're playing qualifying, you're absolutely... spending Christmas in Australia, aren't you?
And the first week of the tennis year is just bizarre, isn't it? The first week of the tennis year is like Manic Monday at Wimbledon stretched over the course of a week, where you feel like you need more TVs in your house, all in one room, basically, and you need to watch them simultaneously. At the moment, we've just finished watching the Hopman Cup Roger Federer-Norri match, which I think Federer just cruise through in about 50 minutes. Brisbane starts tomorrow. You've got Doha. Is it Pune? Is that right?
I think it is Pune. Yes. Yeah. Pune in India.
There's just so much stuff to follow. I mean, it's kind of great, but when you've gone from zero to this, the off season to this, I don't know, my head hurts.
Yeah, I would have liked some of this tennis last week when, it was just lolling around watching absolute rubbish on the telly.
You were getting a bit
family,
frustrated.
Everyone going, is there not any tennis on? Yeah. That... Every 10 minutes, somebody in the Whittaker family went, is there not tennis on yet?
There was a bit of Abu Dhabi, wasn't
suddenly
there?
There's more than we can cope with. Yeah, but not on UK TV there wasn't.
No.
Nowhere to be seen, Abu Dhabi.
No, that was a shame. I'm surprised
someone didn't pick up the rights to that last minute. I mean, how much can they have cost?
Yeah, because
I did find that a bit bizarre.
And Djokovic ended up winning it, didn't he? I mean, for what it's worth, he beat Kevin Anderson in three sets in the final. Rafael Nadal was an interesting one in that I was going to say, I was thinking about this last night, how different this year feels to a year ago. Do you remember when Craig Tiley was putting out those press releases every 10 minutes telling everybody how amazing the entry list was for the Australian Open? And I think our first show of the year must have been us saying, yeah, right, Craig, he's not coming, he's not coming, she's not coming, she's no way. And basically that came to fruition to a large extent. Serena Williams didn't play, lots of players weren't quite fully fit, Andy Murray didn't play, etc. I was thinking last night how... apart from Marin Cilic, there doesn't seem to be really, I suppose Del Potro as well, because he's coming back from a long layoff, but there's nobody who's actually pulled out at all, really, is there, of great note? And then
But there wasn't at this time last year, was there? They waited a little while.
Do you not feel that generally speaking, the landscape is a healthier one right now in terms of the number of big names that you would expect to play this Australian Open compared to a year ago?
Yeah, of course it is. It's a cautiously healthy one. I mean, for one, we know Serena Williams is going to play, barring any injury, whereas, that was probably the most laughable of Craig Tiley's claims last year. You know, we'd seen her play one exhibition match in Abu Dhabi and look well below par and there he is, holding her up as the big star on the entry list. So yeah, on the men's side, I mean, Murray's the big one, isn't he? Murray's the big difference maker because, you know, Djokovic did play last year. Wawrinka did play last year. He won a match, didn't he? Lost out to Was he one of Tennis Sangren's victims? Maybe he was. So yeah, Andy Murray's the big one, and let's be honest, there are still serious question marks around Andy Murray. I expect him to play. I don't think it's over-egging the cake to say Andy Murray is going to play the Australian Open. But in terms of what we expect from him in the draw, I'm not sure anyone's, you know, putting their neck on the line and saying they expect Andy Murray to be back, or, you know, let alone all the way back. I think back is still in question.
Well, the reason I got onto this particularly was because of something I saw Pat Cash, our good friend Pat Cash, a Tennis Podcast listener and supporter, who tweeted this morning. He's in Abu Dhabi. He's part of the show over there. And his tweet was, early season report, Rafa Nadal looks uncomfortable. It looked uncomfortable in his match the other night. Not surprised to see he pulled out of his next match. On the other hand, Djokovic looked amazing and Anderson was mightily impressive and keeps improving. Khachanov looks dangerous. But that's interesting, isn't it? That some, you know, Pat, who was close up to the players, didn't feel that Nadal looked comfortable. Nadal's off to Brisbane now. As he said, he pulled out of that other exhibition match. I do wonder, really, whether he's physically going to be up to this.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, okay, it's an exhibition tournament anyway, and then a third, fourth contest in an exhibition tournament is about as meaningless as a tennis match gets. So you would only have to have a minor niggle, wouldn't you, to err on the side of caution and pull out of that. However, with Nadal, this is the time of year when he usually comes out like a caged animal, like an animal that's been caged for the off season, and by all accounts that doesn't seem to be happening. So I think with Nadal, there maybe is slightly more reason for caution than there otherwise might be, and I certainly trust the assessment of Pat Cash, even more so given that he's seeing it. I think with those sorts of things that you sometimes need to see it up close, it's quite difficult on the telly.
Plus, he is quite candid, isn't he? He's not somebody who spares players. He will just say what he's saying.
Hey, I read his autobiography over the off-season.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, long since published. I think it came out in 2002, something like that. It is a fantastic read. Nobody is spared, put it that way. Blushes are not spared.
No. Don't get in Pat's way.
I'm glad I didn't annoy Pat Cash pre-2002.
Yes.
Put it that way.
Yeah. The next installment will be interesting then.
Yeah.
Because you've annoyed him plenty since
I am
then.
Eagerly awaiting. Publish it, Pat. Publish it.
a lot of people are saying that Nadal looks as if he's got a slightly tweaked service motion. I'm always wary of looking too closely at this stuff because I just don't feel I'm qualified. I don't play the game. I watch. But it does look a bit different. And that in itself, I think, would be some cause for concern. I remember Djokovic, in one of his positive interviews, the one he had with Simon Briggs of The Telegraph last year, was talking about how he was rejigging his own serve to try to take pressure off that elbow. And never a good sign, I don't think.
Yeah, but it's usually related to either the shoulder or the elbow, isn't it? A rejig service motion. And that would be a new area of concern for Nadal, wouldn't it? That would be a new one to add to his injury concern.
This latest one was a knee, wasn't it, for Nadal in the US Open?
I can't see how a rejig service motion is going to do anything for your knee.
Okay.
But then again, not... Catherine Whittaker, not a tennis coach.
No, to be clear.
No,
we'll still be avoiding at all costs our... Oh, he's hitting the ball well in practice.
Yeah.
Which I did read somebody say about somebody over the off-season.
Oh, God. I've read it loads. Every day you read it.
Yeah. Former world number one hits tennis ball well. Shocker.
Yeah, Murray always hitting it well, Andy. He's hitting it well.
That's it. Right, I'm going to go through some more tournaments, Catherine. There's loads of off-court stuff that we need to talk about as well. But since we're into the tennis, let's carry on with the tennis, I say. Djokovic just looks sublime at the moment. He beat Khachanov and he beat Anderson. And he looks, my goodness, he just looks so happy with life. You know, he looks as though it just could not be going any better. And, well, frankly, it could not be going any better, could it? Do you think that there is any self-doubt in him or any specific player out there that is not in awe of what he is putting out there at the moment?
Sorry, what's the question? Any doubt in him or in anyone else?
Well, I suppose what I'm saying is, you know how a lot of these players have this locker room aura, and he's got it at the moment. But do you think that there are people out there, maybe Zverev, someone like that, who just isn't inhibited at all by him going into this Australian Open?
I think it would have to be someone really young and younger than Zverev. I mean, Zverev's already okay. He's cancelled out some of the baggage with what happened at the O2, which already feels like a different lifetime. Mm-hmm. But he does carry baggage onto the court, certainly, and he carries best of five set baggage onto the court. So it would have to be somebody, I don't know, somebody who's like, I mean, it could be a Tsitsipas.
Yeah.
It would have to be somebody like a Tsitsipas, I think.
I saw him play yesterday. He looks so rusty in Perth.
Yeah.
You do find that, don't you?
He did, but that's why you play Hotman Cup, isn't it? Because you're guaranteed matches. It doesn't matter if you're a bit rusty early on. If you play Brisbane and you're rusty in your first match, boom. It's over and you're left with the dilemma of whether or not to enter Sydney to get the matches you feel you need before a Grand Slam, which generally speaking for the men, playing the week before a Slam isn't the ideal preparation if you're entering the Slam, you know, with plans of going deep or winning it. So I don't read too much into that. Maybe I will if he continues to be rusty. But yeah, Tsitsipas is—he's the only name that's springing to me that I think could walk out there and not be sort of two love, three love down before the first ball is hit. Because yeah. Djokovic just seems—I mean, did you read his interview in Shortlist magazine in the UK in the last ever issue of Shortlist magazine, which is a shame that no longer exists. I mean. Djokovic and I have very different approaches, I think, to help me out here, David.
Life?
To life. I think he talks about transcendence and vibrations rather a lot more than I would. Should we put it that way?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's you know, it's amazing how candidly he talks about this stuff. He talks about telepathy and higher vibrations and lower vibrations and being connected to nature.
What else does he talk about?
My bed quite a lot.
You know. Well, you're saying you're a better napper than Novak Djokovic.
I don't know. I look at Novak Djokovic, like he seems to be so calm and at peace with anything. You sort of get the feeling he could go into a nap-like state at the click of his fingers. I mean, I envy his obvious like ease with himself and the world and his status at the top of the game and all of that. You know. I don't know what it's like to be world number one and try to deal with everything that comes with that. So I certainly don't think he's doing anything wrong. It's just a different approach to life than I have. Is that yeah?
Yeah. No, I think
I think it's fair to say that I eat less liquidized vegan food than Novak Djokovic.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And probably you do too, David.
I think I definitely
do. Speak out of turn, but I think both of us eat less liquid vegan food. Yeah. I still want to know the answer to the pork scratching question, although this interview indicates to me that the answer would be no, I don't ever eat pork scratchings.
I wonder if he has liquidized pork scratchings. I wonder if those exist.
I don't think there's any point to that because it's all about the crunch, isn't it?
Right. Well, that's true. Yeah.
Pork scratchings are as much about texture as they are about flavour.
And being a bit drunk. That's another one. Also being at a football match, which we were at yesterday. You were at Fulham. I was at West Bromwich Albion. Grad Matt was at Reading. Not Reading.
No. At Fulham. No. You've got it all wrong.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, so we were all at football matches.
I wasn't at Reading. I was at QPR.
Yeah, we were all moaning about our respective teams. And that's
awful.
Where you eat pork scratchings, because I saw them advertised by a man with a billboard. So there's some news. But you mentioned Brisbane and you mentioned Murray. A lot of people got rather alarmed by Andy Murray's answer to the question about how he feels compared to a year ago when he put out his long Instagram post and pulled out of Brisbane, and there was that heartfelt, emotional, long-winded message about how devastated he was and how much he just wants to play the game that he's been denied being able to play. Well, a year on, I mean, I think if we'd have had a conversation with ourselves on a podcast, which would be a bit weird, but if we did, and told ourselves that Andy Murray was going to be playing James Duckworth in round one a year later and seemingly looks ready to compete again, I think we would have been pretty encouraged by that. I certainly would have been. A lot of people felt that his comments that I'm a bit better than last year, or I feel a bit better than last year, and certainly in a better place than I was at points last year, a lot of people were a little concerned about that, saying that because he said he still felt pain in the hip, that was really bad news. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't fill me with the joys of life reading that. It made me a bit sad because, I mean, this is as good as his hip's going to be unless he has a hip replacement, right? That, you know, he spent the best part of 6 months doing, you know, he's dedicated himself to rehabbing that hip. He went to Philadelphia, didn't he? And was posting all sorts of interesting Instagram videos about the rehab work he was doing. There was that one where he was doing a sort of gymnastics routine, which was absolutely fascinating, and all sorts of stability work. And yeah, I have total confidence that Andy Murray has done every single thing he possibly can to rehab that hip. And it must be heartbreaking to know that this is probably as good as it's going to get. You know, I'm never going to be physically what I was, which I suppose applies to all of us past a certain age. But when you're a professional athlete, that's all the more heartbreaking. You're right in what you've said on Twitter, in that, you know, and this is the sort of language that Andy Murray talks in. He was never, even if his hip was 100% or close to, he was never going to come out and say, "Hey guys, my hip feels awesome. I'm going to win the Australian Open." That's not Andy Murray. So there's reason to be cautious about our cautiousness. However, I do think there is a tinge of sadness in it. I don't think he knows, you know, in terms of matches, how significant the improvement's going to, you know, how much the improvement that he's made, or, you know, he's only able to measure it at the moment in terms of how it feels to him. He's not able to measure it in terms of matches, results. You know, we'll only find that out over the next few weeks. And it may be that he surprised himself that actually, in terms of matches, it's a significant improvement. But it didn't fill me with the joys of January or late December, put it that way.
No. Actually, it also just reminds me of how good we've got it at the moment, coming up to this particular Australian Open, that we can look at this list of all-time greats and superstars of the game, people that have given so much joy on the court, and And we've got a bunch of kids as well, younger players who are coming up to challenge them all at the same time. And there is a pretty good chance that over the space of a 12-month period, we could well end up losing from the game. I don't know. Murray, Nadal, Federer, Serena Williams.
Wawrinka.
Wawrinka. Venus Williams. You know, it could suddenly look, let's say, maybe not in a year. Maybe not in a year, but I would say in 2 years' time.
It certainly could be a year, though.
Could be. I think there's definitely a chance that one of these returning players may just think, I just can't do this anymore. This isn't going to happen, and I cannot put myself through it anymore. And that's, well, it's inevitable, obviously, but it does kind of get you, doesn't it, when you realise that this
isn't
forever.
Yeah, and I wonder
if
there'll be a bit of a chain reaction. You know, at the moment, they're all there together, that crop, defying all the laws of biology and age and physics and everything. But when one of them goes, I'm not saying that it'll be a conscious thing, but subconsciously, you know, it's amazing how these things... look at the injury thing, the taking time off. Federer did it, took 6 months off, and then Murray's doing it and Djokovic is doing it and Wawrinka's doing it. Suddenly, that's the in thing. Who's going to be the first to blink? Oh, I don't know.
That's not a prediction I want to make.
Of those names that we mentioned, go on, I've asked it now.
Who do I think is going to be the first one? Oh, yeah. Crikey.
Venus is the oldest, isn't she? But I don't think that necessarily means anything. I think Venus will actually make a point of not being the first to blink because she's so fed up with being asked about when she's going to retire.
Yeah. I think it's going to be one of those three guys at the top. But I don't think Federer will succumb to injury. I actually think he'll have another couple of years. I think it'll be either Nadal or Murray.
Not Wawrinka?
I don't know. I don't know what state he's in right now because actually he looked all right last year when he came back. Nadal is getting a lot of... he's getting repeated injuries now, isn't he?
I'm going to ask you again. We'll ask one another again at the end of the Australian Open. How about that?
Okay. Well, what do you think before we go into that?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I don't think it'll be Serena or Venus. And certainly not. I might have thought with Serena, perhaps if she had another child, that might affect things. Although, thinking about it, probably not because... I don't think Serena would want I think they all want to feel in control of their own tennis destiny, don't they? They don't want circumstance to end their careers. But with the changes to the maternity rules, maternity ranking rules in the WTA, that potentially less of a factor. Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those guys. I worry a bit that the answer is Andy Murray. I think maybe right now my gut is saying Andy Murray, but I hope that when we re-ask ourselves in a few weeks' time that the answer might look different. Yes. So let's revisit. Let's table it and revisit.
Okay. All right. We've agreed that. So he's in the Brisbane draw with Nadal, Edmund, Nishikori, Dimitrov, who's got Andre Agassi with him. That's going to be quite interesting to see whether he can make a meaningful difference. Alex Diminor is there. Nick Kyrgios is there. He's been bitten by a spider. He plays Ryan Harrison in round one.
Nick Kyrgios has got the most Australian injury of all time.
Yes, he has.
An actual spider bite. Is that ever? Can you think of anything like that? Oh, wise elder tennis oracle!
All right,
snake bite, snake incident.
I remember Goran Ivanišević.
Cane toad incident.
Goran Ivanišević trod on a shell and had to withdraw from Miami. I remember one year on the beach. I mean,
that is amazing.
That doesn't surprise you enormously, does it? The women's draw in Brisbane sees it's a fantastic draw. Svitolina, Osaka, Kvitova, Pliskova in the draw. Burtons against Mertens. It finally happened. Thank goodness I'm not commentating.
It was always going to happen.
Yes. I'm so relieved. I mean, Burton's with a forehand, Merton's with a backhand. Crikey. I don't want to have to commentate on that. Johanna Konta against Sloane Stephens. I think Konta would be more annoyed with that draw than Mertens and Burtons for the sake of commentators.
Yeah, but you made a very, very good point on Twitter.
Did I?
David, yeah, in amongst all the West Brom dross that I try, that I try and filter through.
Is there a filter? I mean, can you actually filter out words that I utter on Twitter, therefore you don't have to see them?
I'm sure there is. I have to say that is not a strategy that I've deployed yet, but now you've put the seed in my mind.
Right.
I'll bear that in mind. Yeah, I mean, if there's a time to play Sloane Stephens, that first match of the season is absolutely the one. She's far more likely to lose a first round than she is to lose a quarter final.
Mm. Plus,
and that would set Konta up really nice. You know, a win over Stephens, it would set Konta up really nicely, confidence-wise. And she's talked in the off-season. I don't know if you saw her speech to the Oxford Union, David, but she's been more candid than she's ever been before about the burnout, the mental burnout that she experienced after hitting the heights that she did a year and a half or so ago.
Well, I know she had a lunch with a number of the British writers as well. After that speech that she gave, she had a lunch with them and talked again there quite candidly about the coaching relationship she now has with it's Dmitry Zaliahov, isn't it? And that he was trying to get her to just take a bit more responsibility for her own game. But she seemed to be, as you say, sort of taking more responsibility for her own life and her own career arc within the person that she actually is, which is somebody that, yeah, does have some vulnerability, and as we all do. But she's starting, I think, to really understand her limits. And she, as you say, she admitted she'd gone over them, gone past them.
Yeah, and I think that's, I don't know, that feels significant for me and Jake Konta. I've talked about her before as sort of feeling like she's needed to almost hypnotise herself in order to become the player that she did become for that period. And you almost want to see her sort of be able to do what she did in a more conscious, self-aware state. Do I sound like Novak Djokovic? She needs to get in touch with her higher vibrations.
See? It's all there.
I mean, it looks like a horrible draw, which Jo Konta, incidentally, has had more than her fair share of. Since she dropped out of seeded positions in tournaments, has she felt the sharp end of that. I think it was Ben Rothenberg that tweeted a list of her draws over the past 6 months, her first round draws, and it's all been Ostapenko, Serena, Sloane Stephens. I think she's had a couple of times. A few other absolute nightmares in there. But anyway, I think it could be a really good draw for Jo Konta.
Yeah. It was Stu Fraser, incidentally, who tweeted that run of
results. Was it?
Yeah,
oh, yes. Sorry.
That's all right. From the Times. And it was, I also got the name wrong. It's Dmitry Zaliahov, not Zaliahov. Does that make any sense? Yes. Okay. I just suddenly thought, have I got that name right? So I Googled it and an error came up. So I actually looked again and it turns out I'd spelt it wrong and pronounced it wrong. It's the same old. Nothing is new in 2019, folks. We are still pronouncing names wrong. Certainly I am. So it's going to be very interesting, I think, Brisbane. That, to me, is the most interesting of all the tournaments in this first week of the year. It just typically is, I think, being a men's and women's tournament, always strong. I just love Brisbane. I love watching that tournament. Doha's on as well. Djokovic is there, team and Khachanov. Pune is where Cilic has withdrawn with a knee injury, which I do think is significant. I hope he's going to be okay, but that's not something that would happen unless it was a real problem, I wouldn't have thought. Anderson is the top seed there. Auckland has Wozniacki as the top seed. And an Azarenka against Venus Williams round one. I mean, this is where you get some seriously interesting first rounds because of these older players and injured players who end up lower ranked.
Yeah, Azarenka against Venus, first round.
Who's winning that?
I watched the Serena Venus match in Abu Dhabi, and I read absolutely nothing. Well, I watched a highlights reel of it, and I read absolutely nothing into any of it because it was about as exhibition-y as an exhibition match can get. So I think Azarenka was going to come out hungry. Oh yeah, I think I agree with you. I'm going for Azarenka.
When was the last time that you read much into this first week of the year? A, in a positive sense, and B, in a negative sense for a player. I've got two examples, one for each, both from last year. Have you got any?
Do you remember when Dimitrov reached the final in... Hang on. Am I getting Sydney and Brisbane confused?
I think it was
when
Brisbane.
When was it when he had the final against Troitsky?
I think that was Brisbane.
Brisbane. Well, I remember, recency bias, but Kyrgios winning last year. That feels like a blooming long time ago.
That didn't
and getting
bear
excited
out, did it?
About Kyrgios again. Yeah. Goodness me, that feels like a long time ago.
See, I'd go with Dimitrov as well, but when he was really looking as though he'd got no rhythm last year in this particular week, and he never really found his rhythm throughout the year. From a positive stance, I'd say Angelique Kerber, who a year ago, I don't think I'd ever seen anybody look fitter or healthier in the first week of a year than she did. She looked just as though she'd had the most incredible off-season of training, and that really did feed through into her year, didn't it?
One thing that I'm certain that this was Ben Rothenberg that tweeted this time. He said, this is the week after the pre-season training. This is the week when players always look their fittest.
Yes.
And he makes the point that, you know, imagine if there were periods, you know, off season periods, you know, 2 to 3 weeks here and there scattered throughout the year where players could do more training blocks. Realistically, in terms of training blocks, there is only one spell in the year and it's only about 3 weeks long that they can do it. And they all do come out. I mean, Ash Barty, did you see Ash Barty in the Hotman Cup? She looks just in absolute peak fitness. And, you know, she's obviously a woman on a mission. She's talking about, you know, challenging at slams and being top 10. And part of me thinks that may be a stretch, but then the other part of me thinks, you know, there are going to be opportunities. And if she's willing to absolutely rinse and maximise everything that she's got, which, you know, the shape that she's in suggests to me that she is, then who knows? Who knows? She is the sort of player that can upset and disrupt people. So, it does make you think it would be potentially good for tennis to have just the odd break of 2 to 3 weeks here and there throughout the year. But it ain't going to happen.
Do you think
it ain't
going to
happen?
If I was to do like a proper tennis off season and do a Maldives and then come back and then do an Angelique Kerber training session, would I, rather than doing a sort of sit on the sofa and eat Kit Kats and turkey fortnight, would I get abs as a result of it?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm pleased to say that I don't know what your current ab situation is, David.
It's like one big one. Yeah.
My brother always says that if he won the lottery, he would take himself to Dubai or Miami, one of the hot places where there are a high frequency of tennis academies, and he would do a whole like training year as a tennis player. He'd hire a full-time coach, he'd hire an entourage, do everything like a tennis player would, and see where it could get him.
Right. Okay. Let's go and buy some lottery tickets.
Yeah. That's what we'll spend the Kickstarter money on.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
50,000 lottery tickets for Matthew Whittaker.
That'll definitely get people behind us. No question about it. That's going to work.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Catherine, there's loads of stuff been happening off the court as well. Let's go through a few of these things because we've been away for a few weeks. Wimbledon is expanding because their vote, the vote of the club across the road, the golf club, where Wimbledon basically want to take over, buy it from them and just build all over it to expand the footprint of Wimbledon and get loads of new facilities and bring qualifying within Wimbledon as opposed to at Roehampton. That has gone through. It has been voted through. So pretty big news. I feel a bit, you know, it's a shame in a way to see that nice golf club get ditched. But for the greater good of Wimbledon, from a tennis point of view, it's good news, really, isn't it? It's gonna ensure that Wimbledon is able to keep up and just be right up there all the way.
Yeah, I mean, I never had any concerns about Wimbledon's ability to or desire to keep up. I don't lament the loss of golf clubs for rich people in the world or in the country. So I feel like I've missed something with this story because I feel just a little bit nonplussed by it. Mm-hmm. You know, Wimbledon, you know, big tennis tournament gets a bit bigger. Well, I'd be a lot more excited if the French Open were... Yeah, no, I know,
about
I know.
Three but... times bigger it's going to end up being.
Yeah, but that, I mean, that's a lot, isn't it? It's going to be a long old walk.
Yeah.
And as you know, I really like qualifying at... I really like qualifying at Roehampton, so I do feel a bit sad.
So what Catherine's saying is this golf club, just keep the buggies and put Catherine's name on one
of
them. Yeah. And then...
I mean, it really is going to be a... From one end of Wimbledon, from the hill over to the far end of that golf club, that is a, yeah.
I believe in you, Catherine. You can handle it. the rule change on the WTA for, you'll be more pleased about this, I would think, pregnancy and long-term injury. Obviously, Serena Williams in mind, she was the one who brought the focus to it, the fact that she came back as an unseeded player, having given birth to Olympia, has been overhauled. And I think it's players that take leave of absence to have a child are going to get a three-year period in which they can enter 12 tournaments on their ranking, and there will be an additional seed. If they would have been originally in the seed, there will be an additional seed to ensure that they don't face a seeded player in the first round. Sounds quite a good way of doing it to me. What do you think?
Yeah, I really... The additional seed thing wasn't something that I had thought of or that I'd seen... I'm sure somebody thought of it somewhere, but it wasn't something that I'd seen proposed, and I think it's really good lateral thinking. I think it's really good problem solving. I don't think it's absolutely perfect, but I'm not sure there was a solution out there that was. I think I'm impressed that, you know, identify problem, think about problem, consult on problem, solve problem. Great.
Yes, no, I agree with you. The Australian Open tiebreak, final set tiebreak, this was originally broken by Stu of the Times, that the Australian Open wanted its own version of a sort of match closer when things are really tight in a fifth set, rather than just going on forever and having 28, 26 final sets. Wimbledon brought in a final set tiebreak at 12 games all, a normal tiebreak. The French Open still has no final set tiebreak at all, so you just have to win by two clear games. US Open has, for many, many years, as long as I can remember, had a tiebreak at 6 all. And now the Australian Open is going to have a tiebreak at 6 all in the fifth set, but it's going to be a first to 10 point tiebreak, leading by a clear margin of 2. Your thoughts?
I think it's the wrong thing to introduce that in the women's game. I think it's totally unnecessary. I think that's missing the point of equality. I think it's a real shame and just completely unnecessary. I know why they've done it, because they don't want the headache of explaining why they're doing something differently for men's and for women's. It's easier to sort of just go, equality. But, you know, that's... you know, there's a lot of nuance in there that argument overlooks.
Do you feel the same about the Wimbledon situation as well, then?
I do. I mean, less so, because it curtails it less and it's more of an extreme example. It will just logically apply to fewer matches. But yes, in principle, I do feel the same. Mm. But as you know, I like fifth set tiebreaks, so I'm not sort of hugely opposed to that. I do think that it's one thing for us nerdy tennis fans, every slam having different rules. That's, you know, we're okay with that, because it's our life's work to keep on top of everything and you know, keep abreast of everything. But I think for the casual tennis fan, it's a bit confusing that every slam has different rules now.
Yes, I do agree with you on that standpoint. I mean, actually, I know it's more extreme, but I was watching Hopman Cup yesterday, and I did not know they played, it had passed me by that they had short sets in the mixed doubles, you know, the fast four thing. But they have it, you know, standard sets in
the singles.
But
it's an exhibition.
So, yeah, I did sit there thinking, oh, what's going on? Not ideal in that way, I agree. And actually, it's interesting, Craig Tiley, tournament director of the Australian Open, said that we asked the players, past and present, whether they wanted to play an advantage final set or not, and they actually called it the most comprehensive of consultation periods and processes that they've ever had in order to arrive at this particular set of conditions for the final set tiebreak. Alexander Zverev said, "We weren't consulted at all. I don't think any players were asked at all, to be honest." And Rafael Nadal was reported by Reem Abdelhaj saying that he didn't know that the tiebreak is first to 10 points rather than a regular tiebreak. I mean, some of that I take with a slight pinch of salt, because I know what tennis players are like, and sometimes agents might be consulted and et cetera, or the message might not get across, or they might not really have read it all or been listening. But at the same time, that is problematic that two of the biggest names in the sport don't appear to know too much about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested. I hope they are asked, and if not, then perhaps we can ask David once we are out in Australia how many of the WTA players were consulted, because I'd be surprised if many of them were pro that change. Be surprised. But I don't think Craig Tiley's lying.
No.
And you're right that it should be taken with a pinch of salt. I just think it's maybe different interpretations of extensive consultation.
Yeah. Also, consultation could be just, "You were told, mate, what's going
to happen." This is what's happening, just to make you aware. But then sort of that's kind of defied by what Nadal said, which is, "Please tell me what's going on, because I don't know."
Well, I've asked it on Pole Vault, which of the four tournaments are their favourites in terms of the fifth set. Australian Open got 24%, Roland Garros got 29%, Wimbledon was the most popular with 34%, and US Open the least popular with 13% in terms of those solutions. I mean, personally, I actually really like the Australian Open final set tiebreak. I seem to be one of the only ones who likes this first 10 points at six games all. I do take your point.
Do you like it? Do you like it for the women?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't have any problem with it as a format.
Would you have been okay with Halep Lauren Davis being curtailed last year?
Yeah, I would. Because I still think it would have been fantastic. I think it would have been a fantastic final set tiebreak. And I think, generally speaking, you will get wonderful climaxes to matches. Yeah, I think those first to 10-point breakers are really good, as long as you've had a full match first. I'm fine with that, really.
Yeah.
I have a bigger problem with the more ideology of just having the difference between men and women. Again, to me, the bigger issue is that we have 3-set women's matches and 5-set men's matches. I just think that needs to be equaled. And the way we've discussed it in the past of having 3 sets for both genders up until quarterfinals or the fourth round and then going 5 sets would be the way around it. And with these shorter 5th sets or at least finish lines on 5th sets with tie breaks, that works still for me. So I think we'll end up getting great conclusions to matches. Yes, they won't be as meandering and maybe back and forth and as long, but I don't know. I still think they'll be great. What do you think? Do you not like the idea? I mean, I thought you did like the idea of final set tiebreaks.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I quite like a first to 10-point tiebreak. Exactly as I've said, I think it's a shame for the women are losing out at the expense of a sort of a misunderstanding of equality or sort of a fudged version of equality. Because I completely agree. It's as discussed before, there is such a bigger issue at hand, equality of match formats. But I do think the inconsistency across the slams is not ideal for the casual tennis fan. Mm,
yeah.
I do feel quite strongly about that. I feel like what we're losing in sort of... But then, to be honest, we spend a lot of time talking about it, and it's a marginal issue, isn't it? It is pretty marginal in terms of the number of matches affected.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, in terms of the time dedicated to lobbying for or debating or arguing about evening up men's and women's match formats, I feel like there's a real discord there.
Mm.
The time we spend arguing about when and if there should be a final set tiebreak is, you know, to me, it's a bit like, oh yeah, sort of, I care a little bit about this, but not, you know, it's disproportionately discussed.
Mm. Coaching news. We talked in one of our end of season shows about Simona Halep and Darren Cahill not being together anymore. They've split, and Halep doesn't appear to have replaced him with a specific coach. There were some bizarre rumours that Boris Becker might be some sort of consultant, which have been swiftly denied on all sides. And it appears she's got her coaching team. She's got an established hitting partner and fitness person, etc. But no sort of head coach as such. Maybe she feels now that she's learned enough and doesn't need another voice. I think that's going to be very interesting. Venus Williams and David Witt have ended their 11-year partnership. And we were talking about Sloane Stephens playing against Johanna Konta. Well, she's no longer with Kamau Murray. They're reportedly, inverted commas, on a break. Which I think, I'm not sure that's a good situation for Stephens. I think Kamau Murray is an excellent coach. I've heard his interviews in the past, and I think she needs somebody who is providing a framework for her at all times, because she can wander. And
yeah, that worries me for Sloane Stephens. That really worries me. I mean, he wasn't there in Singapore, was he? And well, she reached the final in Singapore, so I suppose that's an argument for it not being as drastic a shift for her. But, you know, that's one tournament. I think, it's worrying for her. I think he was, there's a slight part of me that feels, there's so much attributing. I think there's more attributing of women's success to the coaches, and I'm as guilty of it as anyone. And maybe I'm more uncomfortable with it because the coaches are inevitably men. But I do think in their instance, he was incredibly significant to her. And I don't know, the on a break thing, that just the lack of stability that seems to be implied in that situation. So does that mean she can't look for another coach, you know, because she's still technically with him, but he's, I mean, what is that?
Mm. Be quiet.
What is that? Is she allowed to cheat on him or not?
Be a huge moment.
All over again.
Be a huge moment if either Simona Halep or Stevens were to win the Australian Open now without those two men in their corner, wouldn't it? In that regard, you would hope that that would then break that over attributing of success to them.
Look, I'm not saying it's over attribution. I don't, and I'm just saying that I think it's the fact of it always being male coaches and female players just makes me instinctively uncomfortable.
But it might be over attributing, mightn't it?
It might well be. It could be. It's an issue that's sort of impossible to disentangle. But the having the data set of one of them doing it without that male presence, you're absolutely right, would be very, very significant because we don't have the sliding doors of knowing, you know, what they would be without them.
Yes.
But maybe we will in a few weeks' time. Well, we definitely will.
We will. Get onto our social media channels, folks, because Grad Matt and myself have been asking many questions. Catherine, have you been monitoring?
Well, I answered one of them.
Did
crucially,
you?
Not a pole vault. Yeah,
right.
But yeah.
Which one did you answer?
Yeah, no, I've again with filters. I've kept abreast of what's been going on. I answered, "What's the worst tennis match you've ever seen?"
Oh yes, that's a jolly start to the year for me. What was it?
Well, again, hashtag recency bias, but Nishikori team at the O2.
Oh yeah, that was a
utter dross. Just hideous.
Wasn't
barely even tennis.
How to play,
and I've
it?
And amplified for the awfulness of what Nishikori was wearing.
Yes, indeed. Well,
now in the light of seeing, I've just seen. I'm watching. I've got Bencic Bolter in front of me on my laptop, and Roger Federer's just snuck in, you know, post shower, snuck in looking immaculate to the crowd to watch his countrywoman, Belinda Bencic.
Yes.
And he was looking resplendent in this sort of all black Uniqlo outfit. And it does make me think that what they put Nishikori in at the O2 is even more of a practical joke. What a stitch up.
Yeah. Same label. Because
they do have nice kit. They're making Federer look great. I mean, if I were Nishikori, I'd be having words.
Sort it out, Uniqlo. Anyway.
Especially as Nishikori probably is an even bigger deal for them in terms of a brand than Federer. Or certainly as big a deal.
Maybe.
I think so, yeah.
Hashtag MyTennisWish 2019 was one of the subject points. So Catherine's tennis wish is put Nishikori in better clothes.
Yeah.
Lynn Knott says, a slam for a man aged 25 or under. Which
I'm up for that.
That would be quite
interesting. I'm really up for that. It's time for one of them to, you know, do something. Khachanov, Tsitsipas, Zverev. Get on with it.
Sort yourselves out. Dan O'Connor, yeah. Nadal gets an injury-free 365 days. Think you
right. Well, it's not even 2019 yet and he's pulled out of a match with an injury.
Well, we haven't even made it into the 365.
He's revised his service motion and pulled out of a match.
T-minus 2 days and he's injured. Lani says, for Venus to win a title, for Andy Murray to be back playing at full health and capacity. Well, I think most of us would agree with that.
Yes, Lani, I'm up for both of those things.
He says, for Nick Kyrgios to get his mind and body together and win a slam.
It's not going to happen. I've given up, as expressed in the end of season awards show. I would still love it to happen, but I've given up investing my energy in hoping for it.
Yeah, we're not going to give much airtime to Nick at the moment until he starts to warrant it. So there we are. Yasmin says, for people to learn how to pronounce Kasatkina rather than Kasatkina.
Yeah, we do know that we're doing it wrong. We just haven't invested the time in the linguistic memory of doing it right.
Right. What's your tennis wish apart from Nishikori clothing overhaul?
Well, now that we've discussed it, I'd love one of Halliper Stevens to win a slam solo. That would be great. I'd love Naomi Osaka to not have a difficult second season. I'd love her to pick up where she left off last year. I'd love Andy Murray to I think maybe it's too much winning slam, so I'd love him to be challenging.
Have a run. Have a real run
have
and
a,
get
a
us
big,
all up.
Have a run. Yeah, can you imagine the emotion of a run?
Be great.
A big Wimbledon run.
Yeah.
And I'd love one of the youngsters, you know, like Osaka did last year, I'd love one of the men's youngsters to properly break through. So we're not talking about them as potentials, but about being the real deal.
It's going to happen this year. It's going to happen.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You think one of those youngsters is going to win a slam?
Get to a final.
No, you're going to do one of your wafty predictions.
Get to a final, like, at least.
One of them will take our breath away.
I've been specific. Get to a final,
okay,
at least.
Get to a final. Okay.
There we are. My tennis wish is just, at the risk of sounding like somebody, make Davis Cup great again. So that's all I've got, really. I just sort it out, please. Mm. Sort out the Davis Cup.
Sort it all. But I mean, all of it. I'm sitting here watching Hopman Cup and getting excited about, I mean, Brisbane in particular, as you say. I don't want these events to go next year. I really don't want Brisbane to go. I really like that event. It's great.
Mm.
Doesn't need reforming. Doesn't need ditching. Keep it.
Catherine said. And hashtag my big tennis prediction 2019. The swing volley says Kevin Anderson to win the Australian Open. May happen. Kynim Truex says a player currently ranked outside the WTA top 50 will win her first major. More specific, Belinda Bencic, who we're watching right now. James Doyle says no slams for Djokovic. Not happening, James. Matt Graham says Djokovic to win all four slams. That might happen. Anderson
says
Nadal doesn't win Roland Garros and Sabalenka wins a slam. That could happen.
I'd love Sabalenka to win a slam.
Yeah. What have you got?
Definitely could happen. She's looked mean in her pre-season training. I've just told you mine.
Your big tennis prediction.
Oh, prediction. Oh, sorry. I thought those were wishes again.
No, those are all predictions.
Oh, prediction. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think one of those youngsters will get to a final. But,
I'm going to go for Zverev to break his duck and actually win one.
You think he'll win one?
Yeah.
Right. I think Sabalenka might win one.
Okay. Right. Oh, I can't wait. So, Catherine, that's been the tennis podcast for week T-minus 2 days of the 2019 season, brought to you in association with the Telegraph. We are trying to take Grad Matt with us to Australia. We've already got his official media accreditation sorted. We've got his
which
media...
is better than I'm doing, David.
We've got his... Oh, you haven't got yours? Oh, well.
As it stands at the moment, I've not received confirmation of my accreditation.
We'll switch you.
Have you?
Yes, I have. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine.
Oh, right. I will up my levels of concern about that considerably.
He's also got a visa. Have you got one of those?
I've got a visa. Okay. They'll let me in at the very least.
Yeah. Now, so all we've got to do now
could be a 3 week holiday.
We've got to find a way to pay for his trip and employ him. But anyway, we're doing well with our Kickstarter. Don't forget, support us there if you can. If you like listening to this show, keep it going, keep it growing. We're going to try and do that ourselves, and your help is invaluable in that quest. I can't wait, Catherine. The tennis season's underway and it hasn't even started as a year yet. We're going to be back next week with another show. We'll then be over in Australia bringing you our preview show after the draw has taken place. We'll be in person for that one. I want to go and see those animals that you got to see last year, Catherine. I can't wait.
I'm already excited about it.
Yeah, I'm going to go and do that.
This year you might see a picture of me holding up an already dead cooked lobster. A la Roger Federer. That definitely wins weirdest animal selfie of the year. Well, it wasn't a selfie, was it? I don't know what it was, but it was certainly a downgrade on the quokka selfie.
Yeah, it was dramatic, but it wasn't cuddly.
It was a diptych of... What is it? Yes, it is diptych. A triptych is two. Diptych is... No, a triptych is three.
What
diptych.
Are you talking about?
It's a painting series. It's a It's a painting that's done in either two parts or three parts. Anyway, I'm going to say diptych and look forward to being made a fool of on Twitter. Of picture number one was Federer holding lobster. Picture number two was Federer eating lobster with a lovely crisp glass of white wine. It was like, you know, when horror movies intervene with animal selfies. It was so weird.
Different.
So weird.
Different. Yeah. Thanks, Roger.
It was almost like they went, right, so last year we did the best animal selfie of all time. We can't try and match that. What can we do? Dead lobster, guys.
People out. Yeah. So we'll have loads of shows coming up. We're hoping to be daily during the Australian Open and throughout the year. Simon Briggs of The Telegraph will be there as well. Catherine will be there. I'll be there. Hopefully Grad Matt, if we can get him there. Thanks for all your support. We really do appreciate it. We love producing the show. We'll endeavour to continue doing so with your assistance. And we will be back next week. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.